Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from these United States of America in the northwestern hemisphere of Earth. I am over here in rainy Des Moines, Iowa, coming to you live from the Mercy Live Up Studios here in Des Moines, where I am the director of the Zeta Institute for Foundation of Ethics and Leadership, and also the director of Mission and Ministry at Mercy College of Health Sciences. You want to check us out, ZetaInstitute.com, MCHS.edu. Bud, Pittsburgh, give us a weather report.
It's sunny. I feel like when it's rainy for you guys, it's sunny here.
It always has to go back and forth. The universe has to equalize. Tell the good folks what you're up to out there in Pittsburgh.
Well, I'm the director of the Newman Institute in Pittsburgh. You can go to thenewmaninstitute.org, and we're all things Blessed John Henry Newman.
But I'm not going to say that I know for a fact that John Henry Newman wishes that he and you could be out here, but one of the things happening today is the Men's Stag at Iowa Catholic Radio. For all of you who maybe are listening elsewhere than Iowa, I don't know if John Leonetti came up with the idea, but he sure takes ownership of it, wouldn't you say, Bud? But it's a night when you get together, have some steaks, and raise money for Iowa Catholic Radio. I think John acts like that's like New Year's Day for him, is every Men's Stag every year.
I don't blame him completely. I've been to the stag once, but yeah, anytime someone drives you out to a forest and feeds you steak and bourbon, it's not a bad deal.
And then lets you go home, right? Like, there's horror stories where then you never come back, but Men's Stag, you get to come back.
No, this is for a good cause. Iowa Catholic Radio, it's a fun way to promote the ministry that we're doing there.
Well, and the reason I bring this up, this talking about new years and new seasons, Bud, do you realize as of the week that passed between last week and this, we've been on the air for 2 years now?
Oh, yeah. Whenever the baseball playoffs get close, I know we're approaching our anniversary, because I remember early on we were at the studio at the Des Moines Pastoral Center and just talking a lot of baseball.
That's right. So whenever it gets heated up and everybody starts thinking about the Cardinals getting the second wild card so they can win the World Series again, and the Cubs blowing it, that's when we think about the Uncommon Good starting up. So it's been two good years. So cheers to you, my friend. We've done something for 2 years, and I think many people in our lives are amazed whenever we do things for more than 1 month.
That's right.
Longtime sponsors and underwriters, speaking of this as well, Cartridge World has really been there from the beginning. Cartridge World in Windsor Heights, 801 73rd Street here in Iowa. If we were smart, Bud, we would have gone and got cartridges and printed out Happy 2 Years or something like this.
That would have been nice. You know, with school underway, my students are thinking of printing papers and things like that, so those printing needs never run dry.
And speaking of schools, also always underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences, not only underwriting our show, sponsoring things like the Women's Luncheon. I think I heard that commercial right before it comes on. Sponsoring all sorts of things, but for us specifically, making this show possible for the last 2 years. We are in the thick of things when it comes to the fall semester, but as we always like to point out, it's never a bad time to start up. You can start up in spring, mchs.edu. We have all sorts of degree programs that are totally online, accelerated BSNs, all sorts of things that we can do. But this is the height of the season of people really kind of getting in the groove of things. If you're in servant leadership, starting to figure out how to do service learning work. I don't know, but football is in the air, baseball playoffs, but also students getting started on a new year is always an exciting time.
Yeah, it is. I know as a student, I kind of like that. I guess I'm a nerd, but just ripping the cellophane off the new textbooks.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm joking.
Taking the cellophane off the new textbooks, and you know that, just breaking it in, like the first highlighted line that you do.
Yeah, we weirdly had a relatively mild August, and it's heated up a little bit this September.
Yeah.
So the leaves are a little confused, but they look like they're getting the picture. You know, we've already started to get multiple kickers fired in the NFL, so I think it's about time for the the weather to get cool and the leaves to fall on the ground.
Is your family like a fall foliage type family? I know people do the foliage tours.
No.
I'm a huge fan of apple orchards and pumpkin patches.
Now, that's true. Yeah. So, like, our immediate family is very much fans of the pumpkin patch. But growing up in Oklahoma, no one talked about foliage. I don't know if that was, like, no one understood the word. I think our trees kind of immediately just died. There wasn't very much, like, pretty time in Oklahoma. It was all, like, hot, 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 dead. So, you know, you move up here north, and there's all sorts of trees, and then, yeah, people are just, like, they're just waiting. They're in line with John Lee and Eddie getting pumpkin spice lattes, looking out the window, just ready to pounce on the changing colors of the trees.
No, I'm grateful to Providence for putting me in a place where there was the Four Seasons. There was a beer company a few years back that around Christmas time they would show like a beach scene, and on the palm tree they'd string it with lights.
Oh, gosh.
And I always found that kind of depressing, so I'm happy to have a little bit of snow, but certainly fall is just amazing.
Yeah. Deacon Tony immediately knew that was Corona, so I don't know. He's like, that's Corona!
I didn't know if we'd have to pay them if I said that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we don't have to pay them. Well, we have for a guest today Patrick Callahan, the director of the Humanitas and chair of Catholic Thought at the St. Lawrence Institute for Faith and Culture over in Lawrence, Kansas. We're going to talk about a theme that we always like to bring up, of course, and that's education. He specifically, classics, teaching the great books, but asking, what does that have to do with the common good? And is there a wider sense than is just the good that it does for the individual student? So we're going to talk to him after the break. This is the Uncommon Good. Stick around. We'll be back after these messages. But if people want to get a hold of us, they needed to just text into the Zip Whip line. Sorry, I said that wrong. 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150, #UCG, if you want to catch our attention. I don't know what it was in reference to, Bud, but I got here this morning, and there's just a text sitting here that says, Bo knows. So that's pretty great.
Yeah, that goes back to our childhood, right, with Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
But I think it applies in a particularly profound way to you.
Yeah, so if you want to just leave me compliments, criticisms for Bud, maybe, 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150, that's the Zip Whip line. #UCG. Let us know if you have any questions, not only for the guest that we have on today, but maybe just a general one that you can listen to us as well. So this is Uncommon Good. Stick around. We'll be back after these messages.
What better way to send a message to a friend or a loved one than a beautiful bouquet of fresh-cut flowers? Hey, this is Tom Bozen from Bozen the Florist. Our family business has been helping Central Iowans send messages locally and around the world for almost 100 years. Whatever the occasion, whatever the message, we can help you say more with Bozen. That's 244-ROSE, 244-7673, or visit us at Bozen.com.
Since 1924, St. Vincent de Paul has been helping those less fortunate work towards self-sufficiency. Last year, St. Vincent de Paul helped over 20,000 individuals with food, clothing, and shelter, while also offering classes in financial literacy, high school completion, career readiness, and prisoner reentry. SVDPDSM.org, 515-282-8327. Shop, donate, volunteer, serve. This message was brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Ladies, fall is here, and the Ladies' Mosaic Luncheons are back. Our next luncheon is on Thursday, October 11th at Sacred Heart Church in West Des Moines. Our featured speaker is Katie Patrizio, and her talk is titled, Mary, Our Queen and Mother. You don't want to miss this. Doors open at 11:30 and lunch is from 12 to 1. Register online at iowacatholicradio.com or call 223-1150 for more information. Space is limited, so sign up today.
Well, Welcome back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr, Iowa Catholic Radio, Live Up, Mercy Live Up Studios. Today, we have on the show Patrick Callahan, Dr. Patrick Callahan, I should say, Director of Humanitas and the Chair of Catholic Thought at St. Lawrence Institute for Faith and Culture, over there by Kansas University in Lawrence, Kansas. Patrick, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Bo.
Patrick, it's always great to talk about to people who nerd out to the same books as you do. I have had the privilege to see you live talking with students about the great books. One of the things when you hear great books, people can argue about what is a great book, what's a good book, what are the classics and things like this. But what I wanted to start out asking you today, anytime you get down to the nitty-gritty and tell people, we try to teach kids the classics, college kids particular, high school kids when we can, when we say that we want to give them a well-rounded, humane, liberal arts education, ultimately someone goes something to this effect. Well, that sounds great for that kid. I'm glad that they get to learn these great books. But beyond them, who does it benefit? So I guess just to start out of the gate, Patrick, when we start talking about classical education and doing education different, why is this a concern for the common good and not just like a nice option for people to choose if they so would want to do that?
Yeah, thank you, Bo. That's a good question. You know, part of the resistance that we meet today is perhaps hanging up on the very word classic. When we talk about classical education, which makes it seem as if it's a thing of the past, right? What we're really talking about here is an eternal education, an education that we're all called to. I mean, as Aristotle says, all men by nature desire to know. What we are experiencing, and perhaps rightly in some ways, is a little bit of a pushback against what John Senior called itchy lists, right? Okay, give me the 100 books that I have to read, and I'm going to go through them, and I'm going to be greatly educated. And there rightly is sort of a resistance against this movement, which tries to reduce the great books and the classical education to just sort of a checklist, as it were, right? That's kind of like the modern approach. Whereas the sort of, I guess I would call it eternal education that we're aimed towards is the word, but we're embodied souls. And, you know, barring some sort of special divine revelations and mystical visions, one of the ways in which we can prepare ourselves for the reception of that is through the cultivation of God's gift to us, of our intellect, of our mind. And we're not meant to do that alone. We're meant to do that in community. And if I'm doing that in community just with the people I know, I look around me and, you know, people I know are just as messed up as I am. And coming from New Jersey, from a very lower class background, you know, there wasn't a lot of good influences and role models. What education does through books is allow you to sort of break up the tyranny of the present and break into, you know, the past, but not just the past. I mean, people in the past who said something that was directed towards the eternal.
Patrick, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, and that way, I think, you know, talking about the common good, right? Again, it's what education is meant to do is to break you out of the self and redirect you towards that original purpose for yourself. I tell my children all the time, and they're not reading Homer and things like that. We're reading, you know, like Robert Louis Stevenson and good books. But the Mass is the ultimate pedagogical experience, right there. And so everything else that we can do is preparatory for enjoying the Mass and enjoying heaven.
One of the things that I'm glad you pointed out, so you point out that you were from New Jersey, and let me just say, I'm sorry, man. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. But you're interesting, right? You're from New Jersey. You don't come from a background where, like, you woke up and, you know, your nursemaid read, you know, Shakespeare to you in the crib. I am white trash from Oklahoma. Bud is the son of Nebraska steelworkers. One of the things that really I hear that doesn't track with any of my experience is there's a sort of, and I think it's fair because people have encountered this, there's sort of a predisposed notion that the minute you start talking about classical education or you like great books, that you must come from a privileged background and you grew up with this, and this is why you're such a big advocate of it. There was not great books in Medford, Oklahoma, people. I can guarantee you that. I used to make librarians mad in the little schools I grew up in, like asking for all sorts of weird books that, you know, they didn't have. And, you know, not to act like I'm some sort of great person, just to point out that one of the things that I felt so great about it is the liberating notion that it doesn't matter where you come from. If you get to the level where you can read and you have a good teacher, this is truly something that can, like you said, scale over years of not being, you know, quote unquote, at an elite school. Because Aristotle, you know, we live in a lucky time where you can just go read translations of Aristotle. You don't have to happen to be in like the five places that he's at. But that means that a community has to be there, right? That it's not just enough that I go on the internet and read Aristotle, but that we find people in, like you said, in a community that directs this and allows us to overcome the quote-unquote, like you said, tyranny of our present circumstance.
Precisely. And, you know, one of the things that even the great books have taught us, I mean, if you look at Plato warns about writing, right? Writing is great because in some ways it does help us to break the tyranny of the present, but at other times writing presents a problem because you can't question it. You can't go into dialogue with writing. And so you do need a community. And fortunately, we live in a culture today where it's hard to find and achieve those sorts of communities of what are you reading? What did you think of this? You know, I can't. You know, barring some sort of time machine where I'm allowed to pass notes back to Plato, I can't shuttle questions back and forth to him about finer points. I don't understand this. So I've been blessed in my life to not only have read good books, but also to have some great teachers as well.
Patrick, this is Bud. Thanks for being on. In this conversation, like one person who comes to mind that I've read is the literary critic Harold Bloom. And he's warned us of this idea. Like he says, in a sense, we should be careful about moralizing with literature. And what he has in mind is, you know, like the genius writers, there's something sort of like completely gratuitous about great art, that it's there to inspire and, you know, to kind of like he talks about the sublime. And I wonder, as Catholics, when we sort of sell people, so to speak, on the idea of the great books, do you think there's a danger in saying, like, well, this will produce good people? And I know that's not what you were saying earlier, but how do we kind of balance that, like, literature has this kind of gratuity to it with this idea, like, I hear some people say, like, well, if people don't learn to read, then democracy is going to falter or something along those lines?
That's a great point. On the one hand, you have to combat sort of this idea of a classism with the classics. They're not classist. They're open to everyone. They're a democracy. On the other hand, what we have forgotten, and, you know, I don't want to sort of peg-hole our audience or anything like that, but moving in Catholic circles, there's a great deal of interest in philosophy and theology, but there's not a great interest, I would say, in sort of understanding from a Catholic perspective all the other avenues of culture that Catholicism touches upon and moves in. For anyone who's been able to go to the Vatican or at least has studied the paintings of Raphael, there's a wonderful salon chamber in the Sistine Chapel area where the School of Athens is portrayed. And we kind of all know that as the classic Plato and Aristotle in the middle. Of course, describing this on radio is probably not a good idea.
No, go ahead. We do art a lot, and like I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah. But on the one, you know, that's one of the walls. The wall opposite, in sort of like a transformation of it, is the exposition of the Eucharist, right? And all these great theologians and philosophers are all lined up, Catholic ones. And so the Eucharist is sort of, the theology is being opposed to philosophy, and it's sort of making up the walls of this chamber. On the wall in between them, on the one side, there are the virtues. Both the cardinal and the theological. And on the other side, the side that we completely neglect, I would say, in the church today, is a depiction of Mount Parnassus. Mm. And the connection between philosophy and theology and the making of a whole room, you can't just have philosophy and theology. That the poetry is another way of knowing and entering into the mystery of the Godhead. And what we forget in literature, and the reason that I can't stand most philosophers today, is that they've forgotten what Aristotle and Plato and the philosophers that I delight in didn't forget, which is that the object of literature is to delight, to move, and to instruct. And when there is no delight in it, when there's just instruction and the exhortations to change morally, and we have very little motivation. I'm about to teach this evening a class on Dante, and one of the things that I'm just, you know, as I'm teaching Dante over the years, realizing over and over again is that delight and desire are the things that, that move us, that unlike our Protestant brethren who've kind of on the one hand sort of look askance at desires, the Catholic Church teaches, no. Desire is what will move us in the end. That as a society, what we've done is desire is the gasoline. And so in the modern world, in the postmodern world, we've sort of taken the gasoline and we're pouring it all over ourselves, right? Mm. And the solution is not to tell people to stop pouring gasoline on themselves and then throw the gasoline out. The point is the gasoline goes in the tank, and then you're able to move in the direction where your destination is.
No, yeah, that is fantastic. I had a priest once in confession, not airing out stuff, folks, don't worry. But to your point, specifically said, like, you know, the problem is always that we don't have the desires that we need towards God to overcome the petty ones. And so when you have sin in your life, especially if it starts becoming like something you do over and over again, the prayer you need to do is like, take away this desire from me. But the major one is, Lord, give me a desire for you to be in every part of my life. And I think you're exactly right. Poetry has that place, even sort of like simple folk poetry we don't have anymore. And so people start to wonder, like, why do people desire so badly? And I think you're right. Instruction has become simply like dry VCR manuals for the soul. And there's not this idea of how do we put the fuel to have people do things right.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it, as VCR instructions. I imagine my early jobs in the late 90s and early 2000s, and I'd have to sit down and I'd get like the, you know, welcome to such and such company. We'd like to, you know, welcome to the Catholic Church. I'm going to walk you through today some of the interesting things about it. And yeah, it is.
That's so terrible, but you're right.
I mean, when homiletics are like that as well, right? The idea of delight is just completely divorced from it, right?
Not naming names, but yeah, you're right.
No, classically, I mean, like, we've forgotten. I teach a rhetoric class as well, and in rhetoric, you know, we talk about the genres of rhetoric, right? That is it a forensic speech, like a law court case? Is it an epideictic speech? Is it a speech where you're supposed to delight, or is it a deliberative speech supposed to move you? You know, not sort of faulting our priests since I'm a layman, but most speeches today and are just forensic, right? The straight up treating the Bible like a cadaver. Let me open it up and diagnose it for you. We're not really there for that. You know, we're not the judge and the jury in that church. Someone else is.
So Patrick, I'm curious, with teaching Dante this semester, like how do you go about that, and how do the students respond to walking through what in our day and age is kind of a difficult text?
It is a difficult text. I can tell you, and it's free online, so people can turn to it. I think the Robert and Jean Hollander edition, I know that a lot of Catholics like the Esalen edition, and I like it too, but I think Robert and Jean Hollander's edition of Dante is just fantastic in terms of capturing a lot of the nuance of the poetry, even transferring over some of the alliterations and the ways that the, you know, just communicating the beauty of it. But at the same time, the way that I structure class is not just sort of I'm up there, British-style lecture, nor is it sort of a Socratic free-for-all with everyone airing their opinion, like the famous Onion article, guy in philosophy class won't, you know, bleep the bleep up, right?
Yeah, I love that one. Go ahead.
What we do instead is kind of let the author speak. I know that some students don't have all the time in the world to read everything or read it carefully. I can't trust today that everyone's been well-formed to read for comprehension. So one of the things I learned through some great mentors of mine was to just allow silence and allow the author to speak. Sometimes they'll be like, oh, you got to cite the page. Don't just cite the page. Start the class by really the same way that you would do Lectio Divina, right? Spending 5 minutes, 10 minutes reading Dante out loud. You know, that we're all there in that moment, really getting to the meat of it. And all of a sudden, what I find is that when we just allow Dante to speak, when I stop, today I think we're all familiar with sort of cult of personality professors, right? The one who's just got so many brilliant notes, who completely ignores the students, doesn't know where the students are at. He's just, you know, and the modern university's kind of geared that way. You go to graduate school and you're talking at a certain level and you're prepared to talk at a certain level and you find it delightful. And it's great that you find it delightful. I love talking about that stuff, getting in the weeds, getting in the rabbit holes, getting into the full depths of it. But too many faculty, they ignore the idea that they have to know their audience. And so I find spending 5-10 minutes reading Dante out loud and then going through it. And allowing sort of the synchronicity of the past to enter in as well. One of the things I do in my classes is read and help students memorize great poetry. And oftentimes they link up. We just finished reading St. Augustine's Confessions, and we're reading Holy Sonnet 1 by John Donne, and we're memorizing it. And John Donne is talking about how he's weighted down by his sin towards hell, and how God will have to draw him up like a magnet. And the students are like, oh, so what Augustine was saying in the Confessions about, you know, my love is my weight, right? My desire is my weight, right? That's not just Augustine, right? That's a valid analogy to help us understand sin and grace.
Well, you're talking about this on air, so now people just have to hear me like workshop an idea that you've helped me clarify to myself. I've always asked, you know, at some point when you're teaching these texts, like, you know, what struck out to you guys? What really seems to be something that's interesting to you? And I've always tried to also point out that I really don't care about their opinions at all, right? I go this is not like Bo's interested in like your unformed 17-year-old or 22-year-old opinion. So then I'm like, why do I keep asking it? And it's exactly like you said. What I'm interested in is to see, like what you said, where they're at. If they all keep talking about the same sort of thing struck them, good for them that they've figured out that they like a certain part of it. But actually what we need to do is, okay, is this the entry point? Is this something that they're getting severely wrong? Or like, are they showing that they're starting to, if you teach over time, right, like on a class, you start to see them getting more keen and seeing different avenues into the text and things like this. I just have never thought about how to explicitly put it that way. And the Lectio Divina thing that you pointed out is a great way to make this point. And I think to the audience we that's listening to us, that maybe that's a starting off point as well. We get confused thinking that the point of reading this literature is whether I like it or not. And I always try to say, like, actually, we think that there's books that read us and that they're good enough to submit ourselves to, right? To let Dante read us, to let St. Augustine read us. And I think that can only happen in a community at some point, right? Is that people help you understand how the book can read you.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And I would urge your listeners, right, that like the point of reading these books is not to add it onto the list of your Goodreads, you know, check sheet, or to try to meet your reading challenge, right? To go slow. And all of these books, the great books and the good books, I mean, they're all suffused with the idea of delighting in the end. So if you just read it out loud or you know, if you can't for some reason focus or pay attention, like listening to an audio version, that's okay, right? You know, Homer was never meant to be, you know, sitting in a room by yourself reading, right? A lot of these are meant to be read out loud. A lot of people feel like it's cheating to listen to, like, audio versions of books or something like that. Which is a ridiculous notion.
Agreed.
Right? So really encountering it in raw and not feeling like it's something that you're studying for. I assume most of your listeners aren't in school at this point. And, just delight in it.
So,
and it will... it will provide delight in return.
When we get back for 30 minutes, Patrick's going to be reading. No, I'm kidding. He's not going to do that. But we have to go to break. When we get back, The Uncommon Good will continue this conversation. Stick around. We'll be back after these messages. Folks, if you want to stay in tune with us, you can always sign up for our email, which is in tune twice monthly. As Bud likes to point out, there's always links there that you can sign up and get reminders, register for events, things like this. So you can go to iowacatholicradio.com and get signed up for the in tune email. But also, if you want to talk to us via social media, you can always look for us. We have Iowa Catholic Radio Facebook. Like us there, and you can follow us there. And then also on Twitter, our handle is at IA Catholic Radio, at IA Catholic Radio. If you want to join Twitter, you know, it can always be its own interesting existence. But IA Catholic Radio, a calming voice in the storm. Stick around. We'll be back with The Uncommon Good right after we pay these bills.
Ladies, fall is here and the Ladies Mosaic Luncheons are back. Our next luncheon is on Thursday, October 11th at Sacred Heart Church in West Des Moines. Our featured speaker is Katie Patrizio, and her talk is titled, Mary, Our Queen and Mother. You don't want to miss this. Doors open at 11:30 and lunch is from 12 to 1. Register online at iowacatholicradio.com or call 223-1150 for more information. Space is limited, so sign up today.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Be sure to tune into my show, John Leonetti in the Morning, to start your day. Thanks to Plaza Dental Group, Catholic-owned and good friends to Iowa Catholic Radio. Comfortable Dentistry, 515-344-3523, online at dmsmiles.com.
Listen to me, Joe Stopulis, and Father Zach Kautsky, each Monday morning at 9 a.m. for the Man Up Show, focused on relevant issues for men and the family. Thank you to construction professionals for underwriting our show. A Catholic family business built on a strong foundation. cpcustomhomes.com.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We're speaking with Dr. Patrick Callahan, Director of the Humanitas and Chair of Catholic Thought at the St. Lawrence Institute for Faith and Culture. Patrick, thanks for joining us back on the show.
Good to be back.
So one thing I like to point out to people, this can seem like it's the weeds, but I promise people it makes sense. Two names that you hear a lot when it starts coming into classics, great books, things like this. There's Mortimer Adler, which I think people who start looking into the great book stuff usually bump into him at some point. And then there's John Senior, who I think just coming right out of the gate, I think most of us on the show right now talking John Senior fans for various reasons, various people we know who actually studied under him. The reason I bring this up, and it's only just to sort of set the scene to something, Patrick, you were talking about at the first half hour of the show. Mortimer Adler, I think if you're going to paint with a big brush, thought that if you just got these books in the hands of people, things would really turn around, right? Like if they just had the books and read them, that you know, democracy would be strengthened, things like this. The sort of visual proof of this is, you know, he's kind of behind that movement, him and some other people, University of Chicago, where you got like the 50 great books and you put them on your mantle and like you could read them, or if someone like broke into your house, you could throw volumes at them or whatnot.
John, yeah, for five easy payments of $59.99.
That's right. Well, yeah, and like, if you start reading the history of this stuff in the encyclopedias and stuff, it gets wacky, but that, we don't have enough time in the show to get into all of that. John Senior, probably best known for the Integrated Humanities Program at KU, where he and two other people, Daniel Quinn and Francis Nellick, taught these great books, but the main sort of thrust of this was they had they team taught all three of them at the same time, trying to sort of show people what it was like to have these sort of conversations like we're talking about, and hopefully allowing students to do that themselves. I bring it up because sometimes people think, again, this is all eggheads or people of privilege, but one thing I like that we're pointing out with John Sr. is he didn't think that you could just read the book and be good to go. He was made of, like, the point that you were making, that if you don't have a poetic imagination, if you don't have poetry in your life, if Mount Parnassus is not there, you won't have the interior imagination to go forward with things like philosophy, theology. It will affect your prayer life, things like this. I always like to point out that John Sr. also thought cowboys were really awesome, and he loved beans and coffee. And I think this is important, right? Because, like, he might have gone overboard with it or whatever, but the idea that, like, people have to start somewhere with sort of, like, an imagination that fits with them. So John Sr. didn't think that that was, like, beneath him to talk about how cowboys hold a special place in the American imagination, whether that's still true or not. All that to say, right, Patrick, that if we're not willing to admit that in the general population, that we start to have these starts of imagination, we're never going to get to these great heights of being able to sort of, like, read Dante in Italian and, like, know every word.
Oh, certainly. I mean, and even when you read Dante, I mean, to read classical literature, you know, being a professor of Latin and Greek before I kind of skipped over into the whole Catholic world of you know, doing what I do with great books, to read these foreign languages, you had to know, okay, what is a yoke? You know, how do I yoke my oxen? What's the difference between an oxen and just a regular cow? You know, all these things that just were divorced from stuff, right? And God loves stuff, right? He made it. There's that wonderful letter of Chesterton to his then fiance, right? Where as he's writing the letter, he's looking at the ink and he's like, I like the cyclostone ink. It's so inky. You know, and he goes on from that, like, you know, about how he can only really understand and love people who understand, like, the muddiness of mud, the wetness of water, right? The men in the Integrated Humanities Program used to talk about, like, rocks are hard and water's wet. These things are really real. We live in a time and a day where we treat these things as abstractions. And that's a problem, because we are not meant for abstraction. There certainly is a hierarchy to man and his being, and certainly the spirit and the mind and the reason are certainly higher. But if you throw out the body, then you lose our specific nature by which we are all redeemed. Hmm. Right? Jesus Christ, you know, becomes man. He doesn't redeem us just in the spirit. All of this stuff, right? This is why we have a church of sacraments. And so poetry itself enters into that. I think poetry is very much like the sacrament of confession. Confession is one of those confusing sacraments, because it's a sacrament where words, rather than like water or bread or wine, but words are the very stuff of the sacrament. Mm. We sometimes forget the stuffness, the sacramental reality of word.
Yeah, amen.
Patrick, I like to use the show and these interviews as like a way to steal teaching tips and things like that. So I really liked what you had to say about teaching Dante. That was great. Moving on to parenting tips. You mentioned on the first half of the show, like, having your kids read Robert Louis Stevenson. And this is sort of a two-pronged question, but I sometimes talk to parents who they'll even sort of admit, like, oh, I know Harry Potter's, like, not as high of literature, as good of literature as some of the classics, but my kids will sit down and they'll just devour that stuff. And I don't know, like, do you have any insight or, like, commentary on just, like, well, this is what the kids like to read, so I'm going to allow them to read it? And then secondly, if that's insufficient, like, do you have other books in mind besides Stevenson's works that, like, have been really have really sparked your children's imagination?
Yeah, yes, shameless plug. My wife and I, about a year ago, started this Instagram account called The Well-Read Catholic.
And it's just become this big thing. People all over the country and internationally, too, have been following us. And my wife is, better half, she's been posting a lot there of sort of the books that we use. We homeschool our children. And so she has a whole section of labeled books of, like, this is what we read and this is what we use. I would say, seeing what John Sr., if you read The Death of Christian Culture, he talks about that moment when he's in Colombia and he's meeting with Mark Van Doren, who I guess that name might not strike with a lot of the listeners, but very well-known professor in his time and very influential in terms of Adler and these others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, John Sr.'s just like fretting, like, what am I going to do? Like, where do I start? You know, like, you've all of a sudden, like, your world has been opened up. Right? Sort of Matrix-like. You're like, oh my gosh, there's this whole other thing, and I didn't know about it. And he's like, it's just too much, right? Where do I begin? And Mark Van Doren, like, to, you know, puffing on his cigarette, like, sort of says, calm down, kid. He goes to the shelf, pulls off the book, looks at it, is like, here, here's Plato. Start with that. Right? It's just the anxiety that we have today about some of these things. And am I reading the right things to my kids? Look, there's garbage books. You know, right now my son was interested in reading the Percy Jackson book, and so I started reading it with him. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, okay, we're not following up with any of these, right? but at the same time, I'm not saying, you know, oh my gosh, I gotta jump in the confessional. This book is not morally edifying. My son loves it because, on the other hand, he's also reading Nathaniel Hawthorne's Greek and Roman Myth. And he's like, oh, wow, that's cool. This is, you know, like, as they're describing the creatures in the children's book, in the Percy Jackson book, he's like, oh, this must be the Minotaur. Mm. And that's fine, as long as there's a balance. I don't know. I mean, I think with adult books, there's some times where I'm thinking, like, yeah, let's bring back the index of prescribed books. But the use of the index of the prescribed books was not to, like, sort of, like, you know, burn books or anything like that. It was meant to serve as a church guide to how we can be better. The same way with excommunication. Excommunication is not a damnation. Excommunication is like a dumping water on top of the head and saying you need to wake up. It's all meant for the edification of the soul.
Oh, I think this is and this is always something too, right? When you're in maybe the great books crowd, I don't know. There are some people. I was just saying earlier in the show that all three of us who have come to appreciate this don't come from stereotypical backgrounds. There wasn't a lot of great books in the places mm-hmm. in Oklahoma, New Jersey, Nebraska where we're from. But there are people who grew up in, like, every day of their life, right? Like, you know, they were some of the early adopters. Their parents were. And they never read the 80s garbage that I did. I don't feel bad for them, but maybe a little, because there's a way in which knowing trash makes you understand the treasure that you get. And also, I don't know how they make jokes about, parts of their childhood. The point being to say is this, Patrick, maybe I'm restating your words. The classics, the great books, all of that is not about being afraid of anything. It's about saying we have this wonderful treasure that's been left to us, and that we in the 2018, for all sorts of technological and historical reasons, have just strictly benefited from it, right? Like in one of the classes I was teaching, mm-hmm. we just read The Pearl, which most of human history didn't get to read because of how lucky we are in 2018.
Oh, it's such a beautiful poem.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. But like 1750, most people can't read that, sitting up in a place in a dude named Cotton place. Anyway, point being is we don't need to be scared of any of this stuff. And as long as you said balance, but the idea, right, is like if we have this beautiful thing and we try to pass it on to our kids, then we really don't need to be afraid of them encountering the world. I think sometimes we're not bold enough and we're not trusting enough in what we got.
Who are you trying to convince?
Yeah, that's a good...
Who are you trying to convince, right? And, you know, another way of putting it is that, you know, someone, and I don't know who, as he says jokingly, might have said that it's not the things from outside that corrupt, but the things that come from inside that corrupt, right? If you're just reading Percy Jackson and Harry Potter to your children and all that sort of thing, that may be a problem. You maybe not
kind of leaning in hard enough to helping them. And we're all distracted, and we all have, you know, jobs and work and commitment and everything like that. But Pope Francis talks about it, right? Just play with your children. Just be with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, today we neglect that. And, we sort of, you know, as an educator, I've seen too often sort of this sort of, let's let the professionals do it, right? You don't have to be a professional. And, you know, they don't need the same degrees or education that you or I or Bud has. Just go at it. Make a mess. There's a John Senior, if you have show notes, I don't know if you do that for your online part of the show, but you
that
can...
That sounds like a lot of work, Pat. I don't know. No kidding, go ahead.
There's a list of 1,000 good books by John Senior. It's at the end of The Death of Christian Culture, but there's also versions of it online. And you can just type in, Google or DuckDuckGo or Ask Jeeves or whatever the heck kids are using these days. just type in 1,000 good books, John Senior, and you'll get the list. But don't feel like, and John Senior himself will be, you know, just abhor the way that some people use his list. His list was just, okay, I see a lot of people who are kind of lost. Let me give you some suggestions.
Right.
And now some people are taking this list and being like, we have to follow it this way, right? It's like, well, no, John Senior put it that way because that section is just alphabetical.
Right.
Right? There's no order to that, right? Just go in.
Yeah, and to this point, right, and again, this is not me lauding my specific experience. I'm only bringing this up to maybe put people at ease. I teach a lot of great books class now. People who start going into this eventually, like, you know, in Des Moines or where I've lived, they get funneled to me and ask questions. I didn't really start reading most of the great book literature stuff till after I was like 30. I did philosophy before that, but like, I mean, even that, like, you can ask Bud, who knew me, you know, in Duke. A lot of it was even just reading sort of the modern stuff. But my parents installed in me a love of reading, a love of wonder, the Bible especially. Neither of them graduated college, much less with like literature degrees or anything. But you're right, they went out and they spent time. We, you know, played outdoors. They're storytellers. You know, so the idea that like if you don't read 3/4 of the 1,000 good books, you know, your kid will like join like Megadeth or something. That doesn't work out. There's so much you can do, even if you're not a big literature person, just to plant those seeds. And I think sometimes that's the anxiety you're talking about. But this speaks to the idea about education and the common good. You don't have to send your kids out into the world ready to be citizens, that fully formed citizens at 18. You have to make human beings that are open to the deifying light in their life so that someday they can be citizens of heaven and improve the lot of people on earth. And I think that's been at the background of everything you've been saying so far, Patrick.
Yeah, amen to that. That's certainly right. The goal is not Bartleby Scriveners. The goal is saints.
Well, Patrick, when I woke up this morning, a few of my kids were reading, and I think like this achievement was mostly related to like my wife and the foundation that she's laid. But I thought to myself, like, I don't really remember as a kid too often just waking up and grabbing a book. I had a great childhood in a lot of ways, but I think what's made the difference at our house in some ways is like my wife just being really strict about television watching. And I don't know, I feel like with young kids especially, as parents, like one of the great gifts that we can give them is just sort of like creating the space where they're not constantly inundated with noise. Because I think the human mind naturally sort of like has this kind of wonder and desire to know about the world. But like television is such an easy sort of like thing to fall back on. And if you just like take the step of like kicking it out the window or whatever, I think a lot of kids will gravitate to books. I don't know, again, like with your own parenting experience, how have you gone about sort of like inspiring your kids to grab a book?
By reading myself. You know, one of the things that where they sort of see it as natural is just observing it in and of you know, like a father, like at Mass, right? I had a priest friend describe it, you know, like when I look around and I see not just the, and again, like women mostly have their things together. It's the men who are really messed up these days. But he said, you know, what I really delights me is when I see a father in Mass with the hymn book open singing. And what that shows by example to the children. And so if they see you as a parent, I have a good friend of mine, Dr. John Mark Miravalli over at Mount St. Mary's Seminary.
Yeah.
He said it once, when he was a parent, at one point he was watching something or he was playing a game on the phone. I forget what he said it was, but his kid came up to him and he kind of like brushed the kid aside. And then he had this aha moment, right? That, what is that example that I'm presenting? And that's the moment where he took the TV and put it in storage. And in a similar situation with us, I'm not saying that, you know, you need to, like John Sr. would say that you need to throw your television out the window or something like that.
He also liked Burger King French fries. Don't let him off the hook.
One of the ways of doing it is if you have a television cabinet with front doors, you can close it on that to, you know, drape a curtain over it. Yeah. But even then, I mean, it just becomes a thing in the background if you have a house, if you have a culture where, you know, reading and being present, it doesn't have to just be reading, right? I mean, John Sr., for all that he loved cowboys, also loved all the other handicrafts of man. We live in kind of this postmodern world where everyone's kind of choose your own adventure in rediscovering traditions. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't rediscover the traditions.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to organically cultivate as best you can some of these traditions. So making your own homebrew, having a garden, all these sorts of things. We do Charlotte Mason nature journaling with our children, where we just, you know, part of the homeschool process is just going to the local park with a journal and colored pencils and looking at animals and touching stuff. And that, you know, that's just as important, I would say, as them reading.
Well,
reading with, yeah.
No, and we got to close up, but the last thing this reminds me of is like one thing that like I'm secretly, it's like a cold war with my kids. They love reading when they should be going to bed. And so like we'll walk in and it's like 11:30 and like one of them is like reading with a light behind, and I'm all like, "You know what? If this is my kid's squirrely antics not behaving, like I'm going to be happy with it, right?" Mm-hmm. If like with my kids talking to each other, if they're like, "We're going to figure out ways to secretly read a book," I'm like, "All right, I'm winning the lottery."
Yeah, I've certainly caught flashlights under blankets and these sorts of things.
Well, Patrick, it's been to use your word, delightful to talk to you on the show. We got to have you back at some point. You talked about an Instagram account. Is there any other places that people can reach you or your work or look more into this real quick?
Yeah, if you just go to wellreadcatholic.com, that links to all of our materials. So we have a larger following on Instagram, but we're slowly building up other presence, but sort of trying to branch out just, you know, in terms of how do you form, you know, children in this way, but also as an adult, how do you continue? And the idea that you don't have to just read philosophy and theology. As much as they might have a high place in the pecking order, that really the well-rounded person, the well-read Catholic, is someone who, you know, participates in all of creation that God has given us.
Well, Patrick, like we said, thank you so much for being on the show, and people can reach you there. Patrick Callahan, Director of Humanitas, Chair of Catholic Thought at St. Lawrence Institute for Faith and Culture. Thank you for being on the show, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you so much.
All right, this is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our city, our state, our nation, the world, the galaxy. This is the Uncommon Good. God bless, and we'll talk to you later. The eagle was sleeping, bud.
That sounded particularly gentle.
Yeah. So things that are happening, we kind of gone long, folks, but it was such a wonderful topic. And I wanted to brag that when my kids do things wrong, they read books and not more. So sorry about that. The men's stag that we talked about at the top of the show is tonight. When does that start, everybody? Anybody? Five. You can go online, iowacatholicradio.com, to find out more, but we would love to see you out there. We have Christ Our Life Conference coming up September 29th through 30th. I think that I'm going to be live broadcasting from there if you can't make it. But if people want to participate in Iowa Catholic Radio throughout the day, how are ways they can do that?
It's Ember Week, so if you're looking for a chance to practice some penance, you can wake up really early and start with the Bible in a Year.
Booyah.
At 5 a.m. That transitions to the Rosary. Father Andrew gives a gospel reflection every morning, and then we replay it in the evening, I believe, at 9:30 or so. So a lot of chances to deepen your spiritual life just by relying on our radio broadcast.
And then, of course, our ministry is not just the people talking. It's you and the people who support the show. Especially, we have coming up here pretty soon, Carathon. So if you want to send in something early, you know, to get the process rolling, cool. But if not, Fall Carathon will be coming up, and your donations are what allow this presence of Jesus Christ through radio 24/7 throughout walls here in Central Iowa and beyond. Bud, good talking to you. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, everybody. The Uncommon Good. We will be back, and may God bless you the rest of the week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.